You're listening to the Oz Media Report podcast. My name's Dan Barrett, and this week on the show, we're talking movies. Right now, the Australian cinema industry doesn't really exist. Yes, people are still able to go and see a movie in cities like Brisbane and Perth, but the two biggest cinema markets in Australia are shut. Sydney and Melbourne cinemas account for roughly about 70% of the Aussie box office. Also right now, I'm in Sydney. It's been now at least 11 weeks since I've been able to go and see a movie at the cinema. And look, I'm a bit of an unusual case, and I do go to the movies at least once a week, even during the pandemic where, to be charitable, cinemas and distributors have been fairly creative in some of the programming decisions that have been made. Right now, I'm Tori for the cinema. So this week on the Oz Media Report, I'm talking movies. First up, I've got an interview with Eddie Tamir and Benji Tamir. They run several independent cinemas in Australia. The Tamir family own three cinemas in Melbourne. They've got the Classic, the Lido, and Cameo cinemas. And they've recently pushed into Sydney as well with the recent purchase of the Ritz Randwick cinema. The Tamirs operate exactly the sort of cinema that film lovers get excited by. The cinemas are old, classic-feeling theatres with high-quality screens, sound, and projection. And the films they play are a mix of new releases, retro screenings, and film festival. With cinemas shut right now, it was a good opportunity to get them on the line to talk about running a cinema with all the many challenges that 2021 has thrown at them, along with plans to refurbish the Ritz. After my chat with Eddie and Benji, stick around, I'm talking to Brodie Fogg from Reviews.org. The website recently surveyed Australians on their piracy habits. According to Reviews.org, 80% of Aussies are pirating movies and TV shows less than they used to. The findings of the survey tell us quite a fair bit about Aussie consumption habits as we move on from being a world-leading mob of pirates. But before we get to that, let's have a chat about running a cinema with Eddie and Benji Tamir. I started going to the Ritz when I moved to Sydney just a few years ago. It quickly became one of my favourite Sydney cinemas. Beyond the programming, which is a mix of new releases and retrospective screenings, there's a real magic around that building. It just feels like you're at home. Now, you and your family, you bought the cinema a couple of years ago. Eddie, what was it that attracted you to the Ritz originally?
Yeah. So, you know, I think maybe I've infected my family with the same disease, but I'm definitely a sucker for old cinema buildings.
Yeah.
And, you know, our three Melbourne cinemas were original cinema buildings that were closed down. And we took them over as closed down buildings and basically brought them, you know, back to life, like, you know, patching an old ship's hull off the bottom of the ocean and refloating it. So the Classic in Elsternwick, the Lido in Hawthorne, and the Cameo in Belgrave are all in that state of closure. And we've, you know, tried to, you know, bring them into the modern day, make world-class offerings, both aesthetically, architecturally, programming-wise, food and drink-wise, bit of circus in our presentation as well, which we can go into. And we, you know, the Ritz, we heard that the Ritz was coming up and was perhaps an opportunity to get involved with and fit our criteria for being, you know, having the grand old Cinema One 800-seater in Art Deco glory, as well as having five other cinemas in the complex. And we felt that it was our cup of tea, and we thought we would take the dive and, I guess, do the Melbourne-Sydney thing and bring our learnings there and bring some of our Sydney learnings back into Melbourne.
Yeah, now I want to bring Benji into the chat because you mentioned a little bit of circus magic taking place within your theatres that you're reviving. Just before the pandemic, there was plans for a nude screening, and I'm trying to remember what the film was exactly, but the Ritz was going to have a supposed nude screening where I guess towels were towels probably not necessarily optional. Something like that. Benji, you're taking over the programming as far as I'm aware, so are you going to be looking at more sort of stunt programming like that? How much nudity should we expect? What's the general vibe?
Just so you know, we actually did manage to squeeze the nude screening in before we were locked down. So thank God for that. Mm-hmm. And that was part of our fantastic film festival, which is a festival that we run. We started in Melbourne at the Lido Cinemas, and we brought to the Ritz a couple of years ago. And the film was Patrick, which we screened as part of the Fantastic Film Festival. And it was a massive success. Actually, we couldn't believe how successful it was, and we didn't realize how many people wanted to see films in the nude. And it was great to see.
What sort of numbers are we talking about here? Was it good for pandemic numbers, or was it great for, you know, just general cinema attendance?
We had about 150 naked people at the Ritz watching Patrick on that day. So obviously daytime sessions are always quiet. It's the seniors and the kind of the people that are kind of available on the weekdays. At night, on a retro screening or at a big, you know, James Bond or Avengers type screening, there's hundreds of people at the Ritz watching sessions. And that Patrick screening, yeah, was a great success. And again, something a bit different, something with a bit of flavour that kind of definitely caught the publicity's eye. And it just caught on and went crazy, both in Melbourne and Sydney.
Now, I'm not wrong in assuming that they would have been all dudes, right?
You're actually wrong.
Oh, really?
All sorts of people. There was couples, lots of queer couples, lots of Asians, all sorts of people from all walks of life. Definitely some creepy people, but also some really wonderful characters, and it was a really wholesome, kind of safe environment.
Yeah, look, creepy people can be wonderful characters as well. Okay, so there are plans to remodel the theatre. Can you tell us a little bit about what's planned, what sort of timeframes you're looking at, what's the scale of this renovation?
Yeah, so it's pretty big scale. So call us smart or call us crazy in this environment, but we're going for it. You know, we're cinema people, and the Ritz probably hasn't been touched for about, 30 or 40 years in terms of any major works. Mm. Oh, sorry, call it 25 years since, the new wings were added. So all the boring infrastructure will be, air conditioning, lifts, all the mod cons will be brought up to spec, fire, electricity. But in terms of what will be visible for the audience, the few big things are we're adding two new cinemas. So cinema 7 and 8 in the back alley called Aeolia Lane between the Bridgetine College and the back of the Ritz will have two more cinemas there, a 100-seater and a 70-seater. And Benji can go into that, but that will enable us to, I guess, expand on our eclectic programming mix even further and keep things on for longer that are doing well, et cetera. And then there are the foyers, the ground floor foyer and the upstairs foyer, what we call our food and drink areas, will have a major renovation, a major upgrade. The upstairs bar will be expanded into the mezzanine level and will be our architects. So the Ritz is an interesting place because people say they love it, and the homeliness that you refer to, we definitely want to keep. So we don't want to muck that up. Mm. We want to keep what's great about it, but we want to evolve what needs to be evolved. So there will be, maybe you're happy with the current seating, but you may be disappointed that we're going to improve the seating in all the ground floors of the existing cinemas. And in our new cinemas, we'll have really comfortable armchair seating with little tables. And again, we hope to improve what needs to be improved, but all the Art Deco glory of Cinema One will remain. The spectacle of Cinema One will remain. And our architect is doing something very interesting. Art Deco being a 30s vibe. The East and West wings were added 20 years ago-ish, and they have the faux Art Deco vibe to them, and we're not into the faux anything. Mm. So that's where we'll go with a whole new vibe. Still 30s, but it'll be a surrealist vibe. So there'll be a whole surrealist aesthetic of the decoration and the colours and the imagery, and hopefully some surprise and circus in amongst that as well.
Now, you mentioned that would be the bottom floor. One of the really cool things, and for people listening to this who don't know the Ritz Cinema at all, one of the really cool things about the Ritz is that there's balcony seating. So will the balconies remain untouched then, or what's your Like, what are you doing there?
So the balcony, the outside balcony on the first floor will definitely remain, but will be integrated in a much better way, and will have a whole interesting aesthetic and furniture treatment to it that it but currently.
You're actually asking about the balconies in the cinemas themselves.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, they will stay as is. Of course, cleaning it up, fixing up carpet and stuff like that. But the seats will stay as they are.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So what's the time frame for this? And is this made easier with the shutdowns happening, or is it much harder? Because you've got a balancing act where you've got a cinema which is going to continue to operate. So you don't want to piss off your customers by having things shut down or noise and that kind of thing. So shutdowns are kind of perfect, but at the same time, it's a shutdown.
We hope that Gladys doesn't decide to gift everyone the opening of cinemas next week, because there'll be no toilets and things in an absolute building site frame. But we can adapt quickly, and as soon as we know we're reopening, we will be continuing the renovations in amongst opening as soon as possible. But we are taking advantage of the closure of cinemas at the moment, and we're going really hard for it.
Yeah, fantastic. So people walking into the cinema in about a month's time, hopefully they're open, they should probably find an entirely different Ritz really there. Or at least an improved Ritz experience.
There definitely will be some signs of change.
Yeah, fantastic. The actual plans to renovate it, was this part of the initial plans when you purchased the Ritz, or was it really once you looked at your asset and you realised what you could do with the building?
We always had it in mind. I mean, in Melbourne, you know, our classic has got 10 cinemas and a rooftop cinema. And to do the programming that we do, big and small, old and new, to really do that well and be a real hub of cinema culture, you know, you need more than 6 screens. So we're moving to at least 8. And there's also another application in there for a 9th cinema in the basement.
Now, even putting aside COVID, it's a rocky time for cinemas. You're facing major disruption in terms of movies going straight to studio-owned streaming services. And my thinking is that it's probably smaller cinemas like yours that program beyond just new releases that will continue to have a space within cinema exhibition. But I'm assuming that the idea of renovation plans factor into the desire to remain viable going forward?
I'll let Benji speak to the future of, you know, the programming in amongst the streaming wars, because that's a whole essay in itself. Mm. But yes, absolutely. We want to be at the forefront. We want to have a world-class, quirky facility that is, you know, like nothing else. And yes, the renovation and the expansion was necessary in order to make the Ritz viable, you know, into hopefully what is the new next 100 years of cinema.
Yeah. Benji, how are you taking on the programming challenge here?
Yeah, so as Eddie mentioned, the extra screens are going to be great, especially considering what we try to do at the Ritz and what the Ritz always has been as well in terms of the retro kind of programs that were put on, and we've kind of taken it to a whole new level from, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson to Pedro Almodovar to David Lynch. We kind of do these full retrospectives. And obviously we've got the celluloid element as well. So we've got 35 and 70 millimeter film that we can screen at the Ritz. So when we kind of merge all those elements in with the film festivals that we hold, including the Jewish Film Festival, Fantastic Film Festival, Children's Film Festival, with all the, you know, which adds to all the general releases, we just needed more space to kind of play around. And recently we've also started to do some live performance. So we have live comedy bands coming through. So Cinema One, we've put in a sound system. We've extended the stage. So we're doing all sorts of things. And then, you know, the program moving forward is looking great for cinemas. You about to say something, Dan?
No, I was just thinking, you mentioned that you've got the various retrospective screenings, and you mentioned Paul Thomas Anderson. Recently you were doing a Coen Brothers retrospective. So I can't remember if that was interrupted by the pandemic shutdown or if it was still like just about to finish out. But you did screen a whole bunch of Coen Brothers films. And I was wondering, is attendance for a long-running series of films like that better than, for example, I went and saw The Third Man, the Orson Welles, classic from 1940, whatever. Amazing film, but, there weren't really that many people in the theatre with me. So is it just that it was that sort of, I appreciate it's a much older film and I was watching it on, like, a Saturday afternoon, so things are a bit different.
Yeah.
But, are you generally going to find that fewer people turn out for these one-off screenings as opposed to these long-running sort of eventized schedules?
Yeah, it's a great hook to have the full catalogue of a director's work. And we try and hook it into, a film, a new release film that is coming out that makes sense. So, for example, Almodovar has a new film, Parallel Mothers, coming out in January. We're looking to relaunch our Almodovar Festival around the release of that film. So, as an example, it's a hook. It makes sense to bring that director back to the forefront, and then do a full retrospective program. The Third Man screened as part of our Saturday screenings at about 1:30, where we just are playing every week an old classic. It's definitely enough, it's great to see 50 to 70 people coming for the Third Man in 2021. So that there's not such huge costs for us to put a film on like that. Again, it adds color to our program. And we see that as a success as well. So it's not just, we don't need hundreds of people to turn up for the Third Man. For the Coen brothers, for example, we had hundreds of people coming to the Big Lebowski on a Friday night. We had 300 people there. So that really, it's exciting. It brings people back to the cinema. And hopefully when they're there, they're seeing a trailer for something, new and exciting that will then bring them back next week or the week after.
Yeah, no, there's no better way to spend a Friday night than with your fellow nihilists watching The Mike Lebowski. So, in the pandemic sort of shutdown, you have launched a streaming service. So I think it's called Ritz at Home, if I've got my brain working functionally there.
Yep.
Is there long-term plans for this sort of once cinemas are back up and running again, or is this really just a short-term stopgap measure?
I'll talk to that briefly. So, the opportunity came up, through Shift 72, which is doing all the international film festivals, online festivals. Mm. And they had a service and we thought we'd give it a shot and be the first one to launch the transactional VOD service. And it's been great. And we've engaged, many customers during the lockdown. We've had some fun. We've put some unique programming on it. There's been things like... for our Jewish Film Festival, I did an interview with Jesse Eisenberg for his new Marcel Marceau film, we put that on for free on our at-home service. So with these, there's so much choice. If we can bring some unique programming to our service, then it's more than just a convenience add-on. But that being said, in the current lockdowns, we can have up to 100 people a day using that service, and which is a bit of a support for the cinemas, really, and which we appreciate because the films can maybe be seen on other services because not everything's unique. And there are some unique discoveries as well. So your question about moving forward, obviously the main game is subscription VOD, not transactional VOD. Mm. So that's always going to have a limitation to it, even though we do the premium VOD releases as well of films. It's something we always want to be playing with now, and we're not sure how we're going to evolve it and make it compelling moving forward, but we're thinking about it.
Yeah. And I presume that with that service, it's really sort of a badge of Ritz over the top of the platform that... Sorry, what's the name of the company? It was something 21...
Oh, Shift 72 is just the facilitator, the tech provider.
Yeah. So with that, I presume that there's probably just some sort of license fee that you're paying to maintain that sort of service bubbling along. Or are you actually doing curation of that service to a much deeper degree than I think I appreciate?
We are curating.
Okay.
Yeah, we are making choices. Yep.
Yeah, fantastic. Cool. Just sort of as we finish out, one of the challenges, as I understand it, for cinemas that are doing retrospective screenings, the volume that you guys are, is that you do have some companies. So my understanding is that Disney is a little bit awkward to deal with in terms of getting access to some of their prints. And it's even more difficult now because they've got the Fox library as well. How do you find that in terms of actually getting access to the prints that you'd like to be able to play versus these companies that have some very strong corporate pressures and fiddly aspects you need to navigate around?
It's definitely a challenge, especially with some of the bigger guys. Some distributors are absolutely amazing about it and really support retrospective programming and bringing films back to the big screen. Whereas, a Disney will put together a catalog that only these films are available this month and then you really have to go digging. If there's a Disney or a Fox title, you really have to dig very far and deep. And if that title isn't available on 35mm or DCP, then we cannot screen it. Not possible.
Is that hard for you? Because one of the great things about the Ritz is you can get onto that website and see what those retrospective screenings are, not for just like the next 2 or 3 weeks, but really can get months ahead and really schedule your own personal calendar around it. My Google Calendar is just filled up with like all sorts of films coming from your cinema. Is it difficult actually being able to navigate around, say, Disney being so restrictive in saying this is what's available for this time period when you are trying to program that far ahead?
Yeah, it can be terrible. Obviously, they've got things on DCP or on file from the past. But just say they don't have a title. We're doing a director's catalog. We may not be able to do a retrospective because Disney have not done a DCP for that, and they won't let us screen on a Blu-ray or on another type of file. So the Disney's, Warner Brothers, Universals of the world are more difficult to deal with than say some other smaller distributors. Or even some of the other big distributors that are more kind of excited by what we're trying to do and achieve. Yeah.
The Ritz Cinema, people should check it out if you're in Sydney. If you're in Melbourne, you've also got the, was it three venues? You've got the Classic, you've got the Lido and the...
Cameo.
Cameo. Excellent. Anyway, I'm really very impressed with what you guys are doing and very keen to sit in the freshly refurbished Ritz Cinemas when we're finally allowed to leave the house again, which... I don't know, you guys are the only people I've spoken to outside of my usual circle for quite a few months at this point. So, it's very exciting.
Great to meet you and see you at the movies.
Now we're going to go from talking about the big screen to the small screen, or actually a series of smaller and smaller screens. It's time to raise the mast and head into the high seas of TV and movie piracy in Australia. For the first 10 or 15 years of the century, we were notorious for pirating. A mix of limited access to content and delays in releasing material led to Australians embracing a we'll get it on our own culture. Then along came Netflix and Stan, and we've had greater access and it's been cheaper than really ever before. This week I had a chat with Brody Fogg from reviews.org. They recently did a survey that found that 80% of Aussies are pirating less. Why is that? And why were reviews.org even interested in asking the question? Let's find out. Here's my conversation with Brody. Brody, it's good to chat.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dan.
Now, people, they're still pirating, but they're doing it less. Why is it that they're still pirating?
So 39% of the people who responded to our survey said they were pirating because cinemas were closed due to COVID, which is understandable. 39% say it was because it wasn't available in Australia in the first place. Availability is something that, as you said, has sort of been an issue in Australia for a very long time, so that's nothing new. Cinema closures, however, is. Mm. When we first ran this survey, there were more options on where movies were being released on VOD services at a higher price, so digital services like Google Play and iTunes. But more recently, we've seen that sort of start to slow down and pare back that strategy. And Australia, Sydney is in lockdown again, so cinemas are closed again.
Well, that's it. You got both Sydney and Melbourne locked down, and those are the two biggest movie markets in Australia. So it makes sense to me that when I notice a whole bunch of people local to me on Twitter all talking about the Suicide Squad recently, it suggests to me that they haven't all headed up to Queensland the weekend after release and managed to catch a screening of it.
That's exactly right. And as you mentioned earlier, availability has been an issue in Australia for a while now. And it's that thing now that with everybody talking about it online, Suicide Squad being a big one for spoilers, the nature of that movie, people not wanting to find out who's going to die. I mean, what are your options? You can leave Twitter for good, or you can head over to Pirate Bay, drop anchor.
No, exactly. So, I mean, it seems crazy to me in a day and age where there's so many movies being released on a regular basis. Just this week, we found out that Netflix is going to be releasing, I think, 43 movies between now and Christmas. And that's just on Netflix. That's not including the various other streaming services all doing their original movies. And then there's cinema releases, and then there's just a whole bunch of other stuff. That's just movies. And then there's new TV shows dropping on a weekly basis. So it seems crazy to me, the idea that you can even delay things for a week or two, purely because, like, the conversation moves on, like, the actual interest in those things are gone. So it doesn't surprise me that everyone's jumping on The Suicide Squad on opening weekend, because people know if they don't watch it that weekend, they're just going to be interested in something else entirely as time goes on, and it's just, you know, it's lost content. They will never see it.
Exactly. Yeah, for a big pop culture property like Suicide Squad, a lot of people are going to see it just to be part of the conversation, right? Like, I would say I would count myself in that group as somebody who mostly wants to see it so I can be part of the conversation, talk with my friends at work about the movie. I'm not going to, like, a year down the track, if I haven't seen it already, Suicide Squad isn't going to be at the top of my to-watch list.
No. I'm thinking about the fact that in a couple of weeks' time, we've got Shang-Chi, the new Marvel film, dropping. If I don't see it in the cinema, there's probably a good chance I'm never going to watch it because I don't really enjoy the Marvel films at home. I've enjoyed the Marvel TV shows at home. There's something different about the scale and spectacle of these films that it just seems crazy to me, the idea that I'd actually actively press play on one of these Marvel films. It's just not going to happen. But getting back to your survey, so I'm interested in some of the overlap that might exist between some of these cohorts or groups. So there's 39% who say that cinemas were closed, but you've also got 30% of people saying that they're pirating because it's free. Do you have any sort of indication, like, it's not in a part of the report that I was sent through, but what the overlap might be there between people who are watching downloaded because it's free versus having a secondary excuse? Are these primary excuses, or how does that sort of work out for you guys?
The way the questions were structured was there was sort of, a bucket of questions to do with value. And then there was another few questions to do with sort of other circumstances like COVID. So when we sort of broke out the questions around value, there were a couple of questions there, like, would you say, would you always go with the cheapest option, or like, are you just doing it because it's free? And yes, 30% of people said because it's free. But then again, you know, 3 in 4 Australians in the survey responded to say that they always try and find a legal source before pirating something.
Yeah, I found that interesting.
The thing with this is as well, we found that there are a lot of people responding to the survey who are sort of new to the world of pirating and VPNs, who aren't really don't exactly know like what else to use a VPN for outside of accessing TV shows and movies like overseas. And so when we're talking about like value, there are people who will subscribe to HBO Max over like, you know, multiple services in Australia using a VPN. If it's a couple of dollars cheaper, they'll go that extra leg.
I do find it interesting, the idea that people are trying to find a legal source before they start pirating something, because the theory that I've been rocking for a while at this point is back when people were pirating en masse, when there really was a lot of supply issues, so in the pre to just the emergence of Netflix sort of era of our consumption, a lot of people would go to their various pirating sites and they would do their browsing on site. It's like, oh, that sounds interesting, I'm going to download that. Whereas I suspect that when I see things like 3 in 4 Australians looking for a legal source before they try pirating something, that they've already made their, what you call a purchasing decision, like off platform. And so they've made a very purposeful decision to go to a streaming a piracy platform and download the show or stream it or whatever the platform is offering. Versus back in the day where you would go to the Pirate Bay or Torrent Bay or like all the other sort of torrent sites and you would say, oh, okay, I kind of like see the new Supergirl. So you just press play on that and get the torrent downloading or stream it directly off site. You're losing the casual viewership. And so the casual viewership is probably remaining on Netflix or whatever, like legal streaming service. And it's really purposeful. I need to see the specific program that I can't access otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's it. It also comes down to like, I the way I see it is a lot of people, the people who responded to say, like, they try to find a legal source before pirating something is, what I find most interesting about that statistic is just the way that, you know, we are often viewed as a nation of pirates, where it's but it's just the circumstances driving that piracy up. The example I always give is Game of Thrones. Mm. Something that was readily available on a streaming service that you could pay for, Foxtel now, it's just that streaming service couldn't provide the quality, or sometimes couldn't even provide the stream that people wanted at the time they wanted it. So yeah, piracy numbers for Game of Thrones were really high. And when you're saying about like discoverability, I think you're right in that a lot of the casual viewership is happy to go onto Netflix and scroll, and is happy, is like the sort of ideal Netflix customer who will take Netflix's random suggestions, you know, and will follow that thread. But for people who are, like we've been discussing, things like Suicide Squad that aren't available on a streaming service, then yeah, the first stop is to go to Pirate Bay. And like, there are websites like Just Watch, which you would have heard of, like search engines for streaming. And we look at their popularity rankings every single week. And, you know, it always tells a pretty interesting story about what Australians are searching for, because it might not always be, you know, it's not necessarily an indicator of what's the most popular in Australia at the time. It's what the most people are searching for, therefore like the ones that are most likely not available on any given streaming service or digital platform. So what you find there is things like Suicide Squad that aren't available to stream anywhere in Australia. And then the other thing is that appears a lot is in TV, when a streaming service, say, has five seasons of the latest show, but not the sixth. So we see that a lot on Stan and Binge, where so a recent example on Stan is Line of Duty, which has been in Just Watch's rankings, like one of the most popular TV shows in Australia. Stan has five seasons, whereas the sixth is out and happening now. And that's only available on BritBox, a service that not a lot of Australians have heard of yet. So I think that that shows that when Australians are sort of lost for some, like for a legal avenue, like they are clearly going and searching for that legal avenue, as shown by like the websites like Just Watch. But then once you hit a dead end on Just Watch, there's only one option left, and that's to torrent it.
Now that's exactly it. So let's maybe sort of wind this out. I'm a bit curious about reviews.org and how doing research like this factors into the business of it. So I would assume that, because reviews.org, as I understand it, you have reviews of various technology and platforms, and you're trying to make informed decisions for people so they can come and see the pros and cons of something they might want to buy or subscribe to, and you sort of give a bit of guidance as to, you know, the direction they want to go into. And so I look at something like this and I think that if I'm reviews.org, I'd probably be using research like this to think, should we be investing time and resources into doing reviews, say, of like NAS products? So, you know, hard drives where people can be able to like store their downloaded goods and that kind of gear. Is there much of that sort of research happening in terms of resource allocation internally? Or are you using this purely just to be able to point to your viewers, the audience for the site, and say, hey, look, here's some interesting things you might want to, you know, consider as you're also reading our reviews? And is this more editorial than it is like internal business benefit?
Honestly, a bit of both. As I mentioned earlier, like this is something I've personally been interested in for a long time, figuring out how or why Australians pirate and how much they still do with the rise of streaming services in Australia. At the same time, it does, like, it tells the story that it tells is very relevant to the sort of coverage that we do on reviews.org. As you said, like we've reviewed every streaming service in Australia, every streaming device, and we sort of look at it like a broad picture, like not just a hands-on experience, but like pretty granular on what every service offers, down to like how many movies in like the sort of top 50 most popular movies in Australia at the moment does each service have, like sort of giving, trying to give each service points where they have the stuff that people are actually watching. In the case of this, you know, where we might use something like this to create a guide or an article is, again, to, not to keep returning to this, the same example, but it's the freshest on my mind, is Suicide Squad. Mm. So when we realized that there wasn't going to be a video on demand home release, of course, we assume that a lot of Australians are going to be searching for where to watch it. We do a lot of where to watch guides on reviews.org, trying to sort of point people in the right direction. And then after the results of this survey came in and we found that out about Suicide Squad, we decided to really go deep on a big, like, how to watch guide, like how you can actually watch Suicide Squad on HBO Max, like, with a VPN. Mm. We've reviewed the VPNs that work with HBO Max. It's another thing that we do. Like I believe that most Australians who use a VPN use it for that purpose, as well as, you know, the typical privacy and security purposes. So when we review a VPN, we make sure we go through and we test it on HBO Max, we test it on Hulu, we test it on the international service to see if it gets access. Those things are always changing, so it's not easy to stay on top of, but we do those tests. Yeah, and a lot of that is informed by the surveys that we're doing, the trends that we see in how Australians are consuming their media.
Fantastic. That's probably a great place to leave it. As our entertainment options are changing and the way that we're consuming is ever evolving, this is going to be a really interesting space. But Brody, we're going to be paying attention to that. And if you want to see more of this, check out reviews.org. And isn't it reviews.org and there's the Australian one? Is it reviews.org/AU?
That's right, /AU for reviews.org Australia.
Fantastic. Brody, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of the Oz Media Report for another week. Huge thanks to Eddie and Benji Tamir for talking cinema exhibition with me, and also to Brody Fogg for having a chat with me about Australian TV and movie piracy. The Oz Media Report, it'll be back next week. In the meantime, maybe check out my other podcast. It's called Screen Watching. Each week, myself and Simon Foster, a noted Sydney film critic, the two of us take a look at the new movies and TV shows that have debuted during the week, and we do a bit of a deep dive into some bigger issues around movies and television. Anyway, check that out. It's called Screen Watching. You can find that in any podcast app where you're listening to this one right now. This has been the Oz Media Report. I'll be back next week. We've got two more episodes for the season to go, so stick around. We'll be back next week with the Oz Media Report. Thank you again for listening.